I know very little of what the detective scene revealed in its new ending. I've heard of no such myths of the Delarice, nor has my husband Kevin. Though I must say, the coincidence of this centuries-old device and the effective summons the crew received from the inn of the same name is difficult to ignore. What's more, this family seems to have ties to our dear Otari. But I've known no Delarice by name in this town for all my years spent here. Regardless, it would seem that the recording rod was not quite done. Or perhaps it would be better to say that the resonating room was not done with the magics of the rod. For additional memories of a sort seemed to pop up. One of a robed man purposefully diving into the central pit of this magical section of the library. And the other of a Shuni, perhaps Raphael himself, mistakenly tumbling into the same pit. Deciding to follow the part of Raphael's most recent note in its mention of plunging, it stirred them into bravery or necessity. Telford is unclear on which in his descriptions, but plunge they did, it seems. And as Telford puts it, we fell until we didn't. And then we drifted until another plane of twisted time and dreams came to us, and not us to it. And here is where a truly strange encounter occurs. Upon their arrival, if it can be called that, a robed man began a confrontation with another dying man dressed in a motley array of colors. Telford has estimated that these two knew each other, but were somehow out of sync with time. And the dying man fell to murderous betrayal through misunderstanding of some sort, while the crew was targeted by the robed man as he erroneously believed them to be responsible for some sort of attack from centuries before. By Telford's estimation, the robed man was little match for the crew, merely a nuisance through his defensive magics. But the man did manage to escape through a strange swirling vortex of mysterious magic within the pocket realm, but not before being tripped, it seems, by an out-of-time sink Raphael, dropping his staff to the floor, before they both disappeared. I must admit, shades of our dear lost shooty friend set my nerves on edge.
So, welcome back, listeners, to Stem in the Tide. What episode 100 continues. Drink it in. Now, the other day, I was sitting there in front of the stove cooking some ramen noodles, and I was waiting, staring at that tiny little clock on my oven, and I was just thinking about time and how time passes slowly when you're waiting for it, but how quickly time passes within combat of Pathfinder.
Scott, don't you know that a washed pot never boils? How are you making ramen if you're watching?
Well, we've all been on our ramen stoodle waiting for that pot to boil.
It was already boiling. I was just waiting for the noodles to finish. And also, this is just a complete lie and fallacy because, first of all, I don't use a timer. And second of all, I needed a way to start this conversation.
Which was inspired by our very own mega fan. Peach Joy Pancakes.
Shout out.
Juicy Pancakes?
Shout out PJP. who I think you brought up off mic there, Scott, was that the conversation she has suggested for, you know, real time versus combat time and how that really paints a different picture.
Facts. So listeners, you might remember last week we were in the sixth round of that combat when it ended, which is 36 seconds, half a minute.
36 seconds.
I definitely didn't remember that.
Nary a pot of noodles was cooked.
I'm sure you could believe it because of how far Arthur ran.
That's actually, you know what? You got me there, you son of a bitch.
But the rest of us.
Of little shiny feet.
Mm. He made it 75 yeah. feet.
Echoing. And bless his little heart.
Hell of a thing. Hell of a thing.
Well, to answer your question, though, Scott, I think the worst time dilation I have ever experienced was 3 rounds of combat in Skull and Shackles that took place over 2 hours of different rules. Yeah, it was. There were so many different rules interactions and like, okay, but what if this thing happens in this? And it was Pathfinder 1E, so it was already a shit show right. because that system yeah. is fucking. I love Pathfinder 1E. I love it with all my heart. I've built a but character that got to 102 strength. I've hit over for like, you know, 1200 damage on a vital strike. Like, don't get me wrong. I love Pathfinder 1E. It's written like shit, though. It is dog water. It mm-hmm. is absolutely infuriating how much minutia they try to get into, but then leave some really basic shit unanswered for like 10 years.
Yeah.
And also, you're a munchkin-ass motherfucker.
Yeah, no, absolutely. That's why I like 2E, because I can munchkin my ass off. And it doesn't ruin right. everyone else's time. Like, I can't build a Blood Rager that has 15 foot of reach and fucking hits for 72 damage at level 6. And it's just like, I mean, yeah, I hit for 84 damage with a fucking, yeah, but it's a completely
Freeman might hit. Disagree with you.
No, Freeman's much more happy that this is 2E than 1E.
Oh, I meant so that you don't happy. Ruin other people's fun. Oh, you ruin Freeman's fun. Yeah.
How do I ruin Freeman's fun?
See, I mean, so I don't put, I feel like I'm regularly put into the pocket of the GM not having fun because they're being defeated. That's not true. I love it when you guys win. I get amped.
Honestly, like, I was going to say, Freeman is like one of the better GMs at like, oh, holy shit, you did a cool thing, like being hype with you about it.
I'm kind of like, okay, hold on. Was that by the rules? It was? Holy shit, that's awesome. you know? Like, I love it. Yeah, I do. I mean, don't get me wrong. I get disappointed when I don't get the opportunity to use the full thing of the creature. Yeah. But if it's because you use your full thing as a PC, awesome. And to bring it back to the conversation, to the topic at hand, it's so crazy to think about how quickly in time it does happen, you know, in game, you know, those rounds, like what, so 6 seconds per round, 6 rounds, 36 seconds, that whole thing, that whole, like someone falling down off the bridge, you know, someone going invisible, fighting a creature that's stunk for 40 foot aura, defeating it really quickly, Arthur pitter-pattering along, building up a spell, effectively wasting it because of that and not getting it off. Like, all of these things built up into 36 small seconds. Like, 36 seconds in a film, an action film, is nothing. But so much more happened here. And I think that is so goddamn cool. I think that's awesome. You know, it really, to me, when you think about the time it took, you think about all the action that happened, it really does paint a picture of just how quickly everyone acted and how intense the situation was.
Yeah, Krugga, sorry.
How dare you?
Krugga running forward and just, like, hacking at things and then just running forward again and running forward again. Yeah. Sure, it's a couple minutes apart when we're playing, but if you were in that room or subliminal space, it would be pretty fucking wild just seeing him running forward and hacking and slashing or dragon punching. Or
even Aelin at the beginning of the combat, hunkering down behind the wall and waiting. I was a full 6 seconds of like action and going, nope, not doing it yet. Nope. Wait for my moment. Wait, wait, wait. Like that's a movie shot, you know, waiting for that opening.
That's right. That waiting was cinematic. You fucks.
It was a flavor
we
wait.
We teased you, but it was cinematic. If you really think about it. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think like from a player perspective, I have less of a sense of like the time dilation in terms of like rounds going through, as when we fight something that we just have no idea what to fucking do against. Like we might not be blowing through rounds if we're sitting here going, oh shit. Like I'm trying to think of like some recent Stemming the Tide episodes, like when we fought the Urnekhurst or similar fights like that, where we all just kind of like don't really have a good attack plan and just seem like we're wasting turns, and we're like, I might lose count, but all of those will feel like 10 times longer than something.
Like that rock creature that we fought that kept going under the ground.
Yeah. The Urnekhurst is a really good one because how quickly it would have taken you to run away. You know, you waltzed in, were careful, and then when combat finally started, you were turned on your heels and gone. Probably in, what, 4 rounds?
With less a lot of 30, damage being taken.
Less than 30 seconds and your lives were at risk. You know,
and I still
like,
live
terrifying.
It every day of my life.
It's terrifying. It's crazy. I think the stone creature, though, is a really good example, because that one was pretty intense. You didn't know what to do, and it amounted to more parts of the encounter, you just had to sort of see it through. And that encounter went much longer than most, if I recall correctly.
Well, yeah, that was like we went to fight the rock thing twice, so that was longed enough. And then that turned into like a three-parter with the Hydra and the whatever.
And you nearly ran out of rage.
Maybe, but it was 10-minute fight, and it was, you know,
a 1 minute fight.
3 hours of
fight.
Our actual time.
Yeah, in time.
A 1 minute, right?
Yeah, it's wild. 10 rounds. So crazy, crazy thing.
James, any thought on time?
I've never. I experienced the dilation as a player. Like, it doesn't make sense to me in my mind that all this takes place over 6 seconds. But while you guys have been talking, I've actually just been trying to do the math. So speed specifically is done in feet for whatever reason. These people hate us.
Americans.
So after I converted those into a real measurement and got it into meters, you know, 25 feet is 7.5 meters. At my peak, like peak physical conditioning, I could do 400 meters in 54 seconds. And you know, that's not a long time. Like I broke records at that speed, and I think I still have a couple of records at that speed. So all of a sudden, this 25 feet in 6 seconds makes a whole lot of sense to me, because 7 meters is about 2 of my strides, and I can absolutely cover 25 feet in 6 seconds, even in my bullshit garbage physical condition that I'm in now. You know, my bag of Doritos for lunch physical condition, I could still cover 25 feet in 6 seconds. So it makes sense that Arthur can do it, but the actual combat itself, I'm now struggling with the 6 second range. I haven't been in very many fist fights, but the 2 or 3 that I have been in have lasted minutes. Like, I've been in a couple of fist fights that have lasted seconds, and they're essentially one punches or they get broken up. Otherwise,
there's a lot more feeling out, though.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. 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 So I wonder if because of our character's professionalism and our experience, we're able to jump right in and act. Because that first 6 seconds of a fight is nothing. It doesn't exist. You know, it's gone.
Right.
Your fists aren't even up at that point. So,
I would disagree, because I think professional fighters actually take longer to get going because they know more things to look for.
They're rolling knowledge
checks.
We're
actually just a bunch of murder hobos that are just fucking running up and fucking swinging for the fences. Like, I agree with you, James, though, because like the amount of fist fights and sword fights that I've been in, like, I think the difference between a fist fight and a sword fight is that difference of minutes versus seconds, though. Because the second you start bringing in swords, the fights end a lot quicker. Because you stab somebody even kind of a little bit, like, blood loss fucking saps them quick.
Oh, sure.
Cavalry comes in.
I just...
Yeah, because, you know, like, I can get punched in the face for several minutes.
That plays into
me in the chest.
Yeah,
I'm
that
done.
Plays into the point that I've always wanted to make on this topic when it comes like when they calculate this many feet or this many meters per 6 seconds, it's not really about whether or not that's the average for said person in said condition. It is. I would assume that their goal is to create an average for someone ripe and ready, first thing in the morning and full of energy and in their best shape. And they compare that to someone who's had a full adventuring day and full heavy armor and has taken a bunch of blows and try to find the mean or the median of exactly that and make it something that's computable for everyone so they don't have to like consider fatigue every other encounter or what have you. It's not really about, you know, whether or not it's your ability at your peak condition or your lowest peak condition. It's about like just like an incredible law of averages for many, many, many pieces of a situation. And I've always found that pretty fascinating. Just like if you can find a way to just condense it in that way, it makes a little bit more sense. Like we've talked about this before, James, I think. I don't remember if it was on or off, you know, Mike, but it's like, you know, at some point it's like, I think you said, it's like, I can go without... I can go with 4 or 5 hours of sleep every day. I'm like, yeah, but after an adventuring day, you know, that's the difference. You know, you aren't, you know, every day of like working in an office isn't the same as dungeon delving, you know, and it's that much more exhausting. So it's like, it's just kind of plays into that how much you need to rest to recover versus how fast you move via said processes and all that.
And you don't know how like good their rations and stuff are. They could be like super hydrated on Gatorade or something.
Yeah, for sure. I just think it's a fascinating conversation and an interpretation of like you have to take the rules and try to interpret them in a realistic way. And it doesn't always add up. It doesn't always add up. But if you take a full scope look, you can do your best to find a way to make it add up.
Shout out PJP for that very thought-provoking conversation.
Yeah.
And speaking of things not adding up, I believe Raphael just kicked a staff towards us.
That's a pretty good segue. That's pretty all right. I mean, you're not wrong.
But
you
now I must wrong. Add on three things that were not relevant. Sorry.
No, you're cut off. Yeah, you are in this strange place of time or not time, and sure enough, the staff of Shafkum has been kicked towards you, and your target and opponent has disappeared into this turning light in this strangely shaped tower. What do you do?
Grab the staff.
Okay,
I'm going to assume it's magic, so probably not Kraga.
So they got pulled into the light?
Mm-hmm. Sure did.
Are they still feeling drawn towards it like Kraga had been originally?
Absolutely.
Is there any, like, but it's a force that's not so, like, insurmountable. It's just like...
Yeah, it's not, like, actually dragging you, but you feel a draw.
Yeah, just general moth-like tendencies in everybody right now.
Talford will pick up the staff, and you watch as a pulse of this energy passes through it as he attempts to figure out what it is.
All right. Toss me an old identify check, shall you?
Okay. Blind GM roll.
This is... relatively well known, if not reasonably powerful, librarian staff.
Craig Spitz.
Slender pole composed of thousands of coiled and compressed book pages swirling into one another with a mishmash of letters tumbling across its surface. The cool thing about this staff, I mean, it comes, like any staff, comes with its own variety of spells. But one of the cooler things of it is there is a three-action command, an interact action, and envision action that allows you to store one portable text of one bulk or less, typically a book or scroll, in an extra-dimensional space. I said that weird. in an extra dimensional. No, I said it weird again.
Scott,
in an extra dimensional space.
No B.
In an extra dimensional space within the staff, you can also use this activation to retrieve one tech stored within the staff. It can store up to, assuming the bulk is adhered to, up to 50 texts within. I will throw that into your inventory, Telford, real quick.
Kruga sees this and just stomps it out while it's on the ground.
It's evil. Did it come with stuff? Did we get some books?
Let me see if I can do this. And Telford will take it and swing it in a wide arc before bringing the tip to the ground to activate it to see if there's anything inside.
You try to activate it, and a whole bunch of pages just start shooting out of it at random, and they're just kind of like start floating in the air, and there's like a big shower of them, basically.
If only one of us knew more about bookbinding.
Son of a bitch, he did it.
Yeah, a whole bunch of pages just start flying out all over the place. But they don't, unlike some of the stone around this place, don't go flying off in random directions and can continue. They all sort of float down and land onto the platform you're on, or the walkway.
Good job. I think you made it work.
Yes, it does seem that way. Do we head towards the light? What was the rest of the note that you received from your nephew?
No, Mr. Arline, there is nothing beyond the plunge, but we have followed my nephew this far. Perhaps we should follow it. Him. It. The apparition. A touch further. I do not see any other direction that we may proceed.
We should trust in the path set before us by Raphael. I agree, Arthur.
Indeed. And Krega will look into the light with his dark vision and blind himself.
And then Arthur finally catches up from where he was.
Yeah, it was that like this weird space where it sounded like he was right next to us, but really he was still 120 feet back.
He's still way back there, yeah.
The acoustics in this room are amazing. Holy shit.
Yeah. Holy shit.
Well, picking up, interacting, recall knowledge are only three actions, so that whole thing only took 6 seconds, and it would take Arthur 24 seconds to get there.
Okay, so what happens if they allow the light to essentially start taking them?
Well, you start stepping towards this sort of stairway that kind of steps into the weirdly non quite right tower in towards the light, and as you do, you see a figure walking towards you. This mummified creature who is leaning on a staff, walking forward.
Ooh, interesting.
Who just, like, looks up and takes you all in. It just says,
"Oh, we meet again. You want the Rose Guard. Or even the others. You aren't the ones that released me from my bonds. Never did quite figure out who you are."
And it's like a, you know, despite you see like this, the mummified and all of this parchment and this slouch position, you get this vibe from them. And you especially recognize this rasping, dry voice. And you almost get the vibe that this creature is smiling at you.
"And what is your name?"
"Oh, I am the man you fought before, Master Psychic. I am Shafkin, but I assure you, I mean you no harm here. Fascinating that you are here and seem to have suffered the blows that I once inflicted upon you. It's been some time, mind you. I ask you to stay your hand, at least for now.
Where did you go? It has been but seconds.
I went to learn a lesson. The same lesson you'll learn now. I accused my cohort of only minutes, which ended up being centuries. I left here and was trapped within the vaults. The Abomination Vaults, do you know of them?
We have heard this name. We were told of such a place. In fact, we are trying to find the true nature. We are looking for a friend, as we tried to tell you before. Or, we're trying to follow his path, at least.
I doubt there is little I can do to explain the whole of it. I'm not sure what time you come from versus when I come from. Allow me to say this. Minutes ago, seconds ago, I was your enemy because I thought you were in a present time. But it was wrong, and I should have known better, because this place is a time between dreams and time. It is neither, and it is all. It might be better explained, perhaps, when you enter the light. But the vaults...
Aelin raises his elven curve blade towards the creature.
Sure.
What is in that light? You've been gone for what you say is seconds, but you look as if so much time has passed, and you want us to go in there. We know that our friend went down this path, but now that you know what is beyond, tell us, did this take you to the vaults? Did this take you to Belcora?
No, not at all. I went to Belcora of my own volition a long time ago. This place was a safe haven away from the vaults. But it did not serve the purpose I had hoped. I clean my hands of anything from before. I move on. But I was connected to this place. I must have arrived here first so that I can move on again. I don't know how to explain it beyond what you might see within the light. But I assure you, I am no longer your enemy.
When you spoke of other heroes, who did you mean?
I came to learn that the Rose Guard were the heroes that Isonde Kallir mentioned. I did not take the context properly when we first met. I came to learn that even then, that there were another batch of heroes. And you are not them. I met them. They freed me. I owed them to in a fashion. I owed them to a degree. But I am on my way now. If you do not trust me, I understand. But I will enter the light again before you. And you can trust that I will not do you harm.
I want to make sure that I understand this correctly. You walked into this light, and you believe that it forgives you of your transgressions and sins, despite it not being more than 10 minutes ago. I'm not saying that you're wrong. I just want to make sure that that also will apply to me.
Transgressions are not the issue. Time is always the issue. As Isolde Kallir said to me, I should not have judged the situation based on time. It is not even the light that you see before you that is the issue. It is merely the catalyst. It is something formed by our own minds, our dreams. It is subconscious to us. The light has nothing to do with the truth. Nor does this place.
You see Talford recoil when he says that time and light have nothing to do with each other. Like, this just does not make any sort of fucking sense. Yeah. And Talford can cast magic. And so there are a lot of things right now in Talford's brain that are reeling and trying to parse if this creature is telling him the truth. What does that mean about everything that Talford has believed in? Because Talford just watched this man go into the light. And Talford
come back a mummy.
Yeah. Like, not just desiccated, but also, like, you know, gone through the mummification rituals. Like, there's a lot of things that this man is saying that don't add up to Talford, but Talford doesn't have enough to say, no, you're wrong. And so it's just kind of recoiling right now.
Yeah.
Kraga is mostly thinking about how he'd better moisturize if he goes in there.
Aelin steps forward and puts a hand on Arfur's shoulder and says, well, should we follow your nephew?
Not yet. We have left a friend behind. I will go back to the library and get Gotku before we move forward. If time should pass as it has for Shafrem here, then I should not leave him behind. I will not leave him behind.
So, Arthur starts heading back to the way they came in.
Talford will look over at Kraka.
How long do goats live?
Sorry, I don't want to put a kibosh on your awesome idea here, James, but I guess it's an environmental description so much. Where you landed, there is no way back. You came out of darkness and landed on a platform.
Yeah.
As far as you know,
I know there's
no entrance or portal. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay,
Arthur doesn't know that. And like, he's Arthur going to exhaust every single possibility to get Goku, even if he knows it's true. Okay. He's not choosing to leave Goku behind. Not after that many years have passed. So he is going to spend a long time trying to get back up.
So we'll wait here for 1 or 2 minutes while you walk back to
you guys go ahead. He's going to try and get Goku back. He's going to whatever he can do. He will spend hours doing this if he has to. He will not decide to leave Goku if it could possibly be centuries. He's not walking away from one of his friends.
Aelin turns to the magic users beside him and says, do you perhaps know the message spell? Perhaps you could have Gotku take a leap of faith as well.
It's just a message.
I am familiar with that spell. The problem is that we are significantly further away than the range of that spell.
You don't know how time and space works here.
I do, though. I know that we're more than 500 feet away from the entrance of the library to where we were when we went through. And now we're in an extra dimensional portal.
Perhaps try.
Look, if I need help opening a jar or something, I'll come to you for that. But don't come to me with matters of the occult, the astral, or the ethereal and proclaim that I don't know what I'm talking about. Because I fucking do.
The mummified version of Shafkum is like actually like reaches out and, you know, doesn't touch you, Arthur, but stops and says,
tell me, young Shuni.
And he does say young.
Who is this Goku? Why do they matter?
Every friend matters in the long run. And he has been a companion to me for many years, and I should not face this without him by my side. And, I mean, imagine if we come back 300 years later and there's just this goat tied up out front of the library. No, will not happen.
I have known little about this space before I used it, but I can tell you it is formed by our minds. Because it is not just a place of time. It's a place of dreams. It's a place between. If you will it strong enough, and you leave this place through the light, what you need, what you want, the thing most dear to you, it will come as you pass back to the universe, to the material, because this is not anything but an illusion.
That conflicts Arthur visibly, because while Goku is hands down his best friend, what he wants most in life currently is to see Raphael alive. So
yeah,
I am zipping through my spell list to see if I can find anything. That's not it, and he will not accept that, I don't think.
Aelin looks at them both and says, "There's nothing more that I want, Arthur, than for you to be rejoined with Goku when we finish here. But we must press forward to see what happened with Raphael. You saw the image go. What happens if we lose it? If we lose him?
If we I should may, go. Time appears to be of the essence for all of you. Imagine how much time I lost standing here waiting. In minutes, I lost hundreds of years. Step into the light at your own risk, but stay at an even greater one."
Aelin looks at them all and says, "Let's find him. Trust we will see Goku. And let's find Raphael." And he moves forward.
Kroga, kind of confused just about the whole situation, and just looks around and sees really only one path forward, and that is the light. So he slowly steps after him.
Duncan just playing himself.
Well, fuck it.
Pretty much. The 19, real quick. Before you skedaddle and run off into the oblivion.
Yeah, I'm not going to need those HP.
You're not, that's flavor HP.
This map is fucking incredible, by the way. Shout out.
It's really cool. Che and Peku, yeah, they have amazing maps. So good. They've done all the maps for this adventure so far, pretty much.
And Arthur?
Arthur's still thinking about his spell list. He's lost somebody already. He has no intention of choosing to lose somebody else. And Shafram's words did not put him at ease. It made him more worried about losing Goku. So he's still heading back to the way they came in. That hasn't changed.
I don't know if it resonated with him. I was hinting that there's nothing more that Aelin wanted to see other than them being reconnected on the way out. So even if Arthur really wants one thing to be with Raphael when they leave here, he's still got Aelin having his back, hoping that Goku will be there for Arthur. I don't know if that resonated with him, but that's what happened.
It does, and he appreciates it, and he appreciates Shafram's words, but he's still, you know, he's still conflicted. That would be like, you know, it would be like me leaving one of you guys for possibly 1,000 years tied to a post out front of a book depository. Like, mm-hmm. You don't do that to your friends, and he's not going to just let that go. That's not Arthur. That's not his character.
I mean, there's something you said about how you might have tied Goku outside, but it's not like the librarians are just going to leave him there until he dies.
Okay,
30
but no, like,
plus 40
plus
40. 110.
James doing math on his character decisions.
Well, Arthur has a spell called Helpful Steps. If he were to wait a day, prepare a bunch of them at third level, that's 110 times 3. That would be 660 feet plus 30 plus 40 plus 30 plus 40 plus 30 plus 40 plus 30 plus 30 plus 30. So he can make it 960 feet upwards if he spent the night and re-prepared all of his spells. So he's back here trying to find where they fell down.
Oh my God.
To look to see if he can get a hook on the book cage.
So I guess how long is he fruitlessly going to attempt it before he gives
up? Well, he has to go through the spells, do the math, and then go walk all the way back to where they came in and then check to see how close the ceiling is. So, I mean...
So, sorry. Tell me what Helpful Steps is. Instead of... No, sorry. Everyone shut up. Instead of you doing your own thing, tell us what you're doing. What is Helpful Steps?
Helpful Steps...
And how can I make this get us forward?
Right. Well, I'm trying to get us there.
No. You tell me and I'll get us there.
Helpful Steps is a spell that just... pops a ladder into existence at 30 feet. It is increased by 40 feet for heightened level 1. So total, with all of his spell slots, that's 960 feet. So now that he knows, he's got a general idea of how high the ladder can get. He's gone back to where they came in to see if he can find the well. And if he can, will that 1,000 feet get him close enough that he can either shoot an arrow up or throw a rope or what have you? Because if he can shoot an arrow up, he can just put a note on it that says, push Goku into the hole.
So Helpful Steps just creates a ladder for you to climb.
Pretty much, yeah.
Is basically it. All right. And does everyone else step into the light?
I did. Yep. I already said I did, so...
Just double shot.
I was just hoping that someone would message and Freeman would just GM fiat that the message would go through and it would be fucking on our merry way with Goku.
I think Talford is actually going to wait for Arthur in a rare moment of pseudo solidarity. He's just going to look down at the Shuni that's lost so much and see that little bit of like, I don't know, maybe panic, anxiety, stress, something, and have a rare moment of humanity and, you know, follow Arthur back to make sure that he can get his pet.
Krugga, Aelin, and even Shafkum all step into the light. Perhaps the first two first, and Shafkum waits for a while, watching the distress of Arthur and heading back to the original spot of landing, watching sort of the confusion, the attempt to understand by Telford. And at some point, perhaps let's call it halfway through the time needed, grows bored or is unsure of what to do and steps into the light and disappears. About however long it takes for Arthur to prepare said spells, casting them all, and climbing his way up and up and up and up, and Telford following?
Well, does Arthur think it will get him up there? Because it's going to take a full 24 hours. Because he needs the long rest to get all those spells.
You can't see shit any more than you could from the top of the pit.
Okay, then he'll wait.
You have no idea.
He'll wait the 24 hours and cast. Yeah. Oh, I should not have left Goku up there. But how do you bring a goat into a library?
That was a fucking rough call to bring a goat into a library. when we get to the pit, though, Talford is going to sit down, legs sprawled in front of him, arms behind his back, like just leaning against him, and look over at Arthur.
Look, I'm not good at this. I'm not good at emotions or feeling or any of that, but chances are tomorrow you're going to prepare those spells and it's not going to be enough. Right now, we have an opportunity to help your nephew. And I know this is a hard choice. And if you want, I'll make it for you. I'll take that responsibility on my own shoulders. And I'll be the bad guy. But I think right now, the best thing we can do is go back and step into the light with your friends and try to help your nephew. Because what happens tomorrow when you pray to a rascal to go get your goat and it's not enough to get you out of this forever pit?
Then I will know that I, in my heart, that I have done everything that I can. Unlike what I did for Raphael, you are asking me to trade the living for one that is gone. We are on his path, yes, but that does not mean leaving those we care about behind. It never means leaving those we care about behind.
The rascal, he cares about community, right?
He does.
If there's something on the other side of that light that could help us protect Otari, which would he care more about? Your goat or that?
I have no answer for you, Mr. Arlen. I do not know what the rascal would want. I just know the fear that grips me. The fear of loss, again, due to my own neglect, due to my inaction. Due to things outside of my control. Is this smart? Is this the wise decision? No. Nothing we have done today has been the smart or the wise decision. But we have made it this far. And I have followed my heart the whole way. And my heart tells me now to try.
Then I will wait with you. And if it fails, we go to the light.
With all haste.
Talford will nod. And then fish into his pocket, pull out a cigarette and light it.
Are you counting cigarettes like ammunition or?
Yes, I have 3 left for this adventure. Otherwise, I'm going to have to go out and leave
so
my family for smokes.
There's so much more important than ammunition.
Take 1 HP off every time.
Max HP every time.
Kruga and Aelin are, if you'll forgive me, the assumption, are sitting on the edge of the pit of the genealogy wing of the library. Legs dangling down like they are a couple of chums fishing in a tiny little pond or lake. Because when they went into the light, they just appeared back in this room. Apropos of nothing, no connection of anything. They have no idea how or why, but they were here. And it was just the 2 of them. So they sat down to dangle their legs and ponder what had just happened. And it's not long after that they see the scrambling and climbing of something below. And as Arthur spent the time and will to cast these spells and create these ladders and this way to climb up, at some point within the climb, it just kept getting easier. It just kept getting more, it's like gravity wasn't really holding against you. There was no taxing to the physical fatigue of you, especially given you are an overweight, sausage-rolled filled Shuni at an elderly age. And you just sort of find yourself near the lower visible shelves of the pit. Telford close behind. And there is a difference that perhaps you might want to discuss, but for now only the players know, of minutes versus at least a day. But you are exactly back where you came.
Kruger calls down, "Yeah, I found some good books for Goat Goo to eat."
Good books. Never thought I'd heard you utter that phrase.
Kruger spits.
How in the name of Nethys did you... And what? How? What?
Telford just hands Arthur the cigarette, like, "Here you go."
Take a drag.
Arthur just falls onto his back.
We haven't been waiting long.
Let me just...
You must have climbed so quickly. We've only been here for a few months. Yep.
Just a matter of time, I guess.
Definitely. Definitely climbed quickly.
Oh. We haven't seen Chakram.
What about Goatku? The one we came to save.
Like I said, we just got here. We haven't even gone out. We were just waiting for you.
Just, okay. Okay.
Aelin reaches down and picks up Arthur.
Thank you,
Mr. And just kind of holds him, in his arms, and he exits the room.
Just like Simba's him over the pit.
Well, hold on. Yeah, don't exit the room so quickly, because as Telford climbs to the top...
Aelin kicks the ladder.
Just see a cigarette butt twirling down the pit.
Wait, my cigarette, no! Telford is climbing, but a little more burdened than usual because of this new staff that he has acquired. But as he's climbing, you notice this jangling little doohickey on the staff that was not there before. This little round little orb hanging from its top.
What's that, Mr. Telford? A doohickey?
No, it's a thingamabob.
Oh, okay.
Ah, the old thingamajig.
Another literary device.
I'm looking up doohickey on Archives of Nethys, and I don't see it.
So it's part of the remaster. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, it hasn't been printed yet. It's a renaming.
I'm off kilter.
Sorry, I'm still in character. I don't know how to get out. Help me.
Level up.
Nothing says XP like making the GM work for it. So thank you, Freeman. I did not think that was going to be the case, clearly. I do appreciate your rolling with those punches.
Yeah.
But I do truly believe in Arthur's mindset, this is what he would have done. And I was prepared to walk through the door.
No, it's fine. It makes sense, yeah.
And in my...
On the plus side, he's out of spells for the day, so attack.
I noted that.
Yep. I've already spent all my character sheet. Don't you worry.
In my brain, because of last episode's ending, or sorry, the episode before last episode, ending with noises coming up the thing, when he said, like, there's people dangling their legs over the side, I'm like, holy shit, where are the noises that are coming up the pit? Like, this is a complete fucking loop of fucking... I was ready to just be like, Freeman, you son of a bitch. That is some of the best goddamn GMing.
Yeah, really, really well handled with a stubborn player. So I kudos to you, man, for handling that.
I knew I was doing time, and I was regretting it the moment I decided to do it. So, but yeah, no, it's extremely obvious to everyone. Maybe not Arthur right away, but Telford doesn't notice at all because it's been a long climb. But there was something hanging off that staff that is dangling along, and it is so obvious to Aelin and Krugga, and it doesn't. Where the hell did that come from?
How obvious.
Not only that, but it looks quite familiar.
Yeah. What is Arthur's it? Arthur's flat on his back, arms spread, water skin in one hand, sausage roll in the other. He's not paying attention to anything after that fucking climb.
Telford passing a cigarette over to Arthur and then lighting up a new one, like not paying attention. And it is
good friend
so
move.
Very obviously another recording core.
Oh, shit. Telford. On the staff, there's another recording core there. Take it off.
Take it off.
Alfred lets out a... and pulls off the attachment and fits it into the recorder before, like, just popping it into the ground.
You slot the recording core onto the rod, and it begins to activate. And as it does, there's this sort of like shuddering from the old magic and old mechanisms within. And as soon as it happens, you're all kind of on the edge of this pit, and you start to hear some footsteps behind you. And you all turn towards the entrance that is opposite where you came in, and you see these spectral sort of images step through the doorway out. But as at the exact same time they step out, and this like shuddering happens, that you get the feeling because of when you activated on the beach versus in this room, you get this feeling that you're actually on this edge of the recording, like you are outside of its parameters, its perimeter even. And as soon as you see these images leave the room, a learned guard walks in. He says, "Oh, don't jump. Don't jump. I promise you, it's not worth it."
"What are you talking about, jump?
Everyone step away from the pit.
We're just here looking for books.
We've had issues with people jumping before. Come away from the edge now."
"Why would anyone be so foolish?"
"Well, people be foolish all the time. That's not my prerogative. It's not my issue. I want you to step away from the edge, please."
"Of course. Thank you. We have so much to live for."
Aelin, with his hands raised up in kind of a gesture of peace, walks towards him.
"It's all right. It's all right. Now, why are you in here? Yeah, you should have seen the signs on the way in. No entry. We're doing work here."
I'm sorry. I don't know how to read."
"What are you doing in the god's damn forest? Hello, ghost, you idiot."
"He meant he doesn't know how to read common.
Yet.
Talford's particular native language is..." And he glances over at Telford, grimaces.
"I'm sorry. Are you an idiot?
TNG?
No, Arcadian."
"I'm sorry, are you an idiot too? It's not like the whole of 4A Logos is written in nothing but common. What's wrong with you? Get out of there, get away from the pit."
Is the fucking sign written Arcadian?
It would probably be glamored with comprehend language.
You would think. Yeah. You think it would, I mean, at the very least local, but like it was blocked off. So it's not really about what was on the sign.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, no, Telford doesn't give a...
At least not according to the guard. Yeah.
Aelin just walks by, and as he's passing the guard, he says, "We've been playing a game. What year were you born?"
"What year was I born? This is not the place for games. This is a place for research and preservation."
"Come on. Just tell me what year you were born.
What are your names? I'm going to navigate that in the logbook and cross reference.
And as Aelin is doing this, Talford is going to run his grubby little hands through this guard's pockets to pickpocket.
So I roll a 16 on my diplomacy, which is a 2 on the die. Used a hero point and rolled another 16. So, yeah. Just go fuck myself.
Well, between this and all the talk of books, Krug is getting real uneasy.
The best thing is the DC was actually 17. It's like, all right, on your bike. Don't give me no shit. I want you out of here. Don't cross any more barricades. Don't you dare cause any more trouble. And stop playing your goddamn games. Like I said, I'm going to cross-reference you and the logbook. And if there's any trouble, the learned god will find you.
Well, we wouldn't want to mess with someone as smart as you, Krugga says, walking by.
So, as you all snipe and chide this learned guard, but are allowed to pass and exit the room, the recording rod is still thrumming and doing its thing. And as you step into the hall, you notice a couple of sort of spectral entities turning another corner. And with the assumption that you hurry up to see what's happening, you follow around said corner and you see the two detectives from before continuing to walk down a long and beautiful decorated hall, decorated much the same as the one that exists around you. In fact, as you catch up, you see this sort of outline from the power of this rod, this sort of image, just overcasting or like lining the walls as if they are small changes and small differences along the way. But you can see that it is effectively doing its best to replicate what once was, which is very similar to what is. You can see that the detectives are clearly dressed in a very classic and mostly unchanged uniform of the Star Watch, which is light armor with a white tabard and blue cape featuring their symbol, a 5-pointed white star surrounded by a nimbus of brilliant flame. This is the clearest image you've seen so far. The lizard folk, with his snout buried in a book, and the smoldering man marveling at his surroundings. The smoldering man, the Ifriti, speaks first.
I can't believe I never bothered to come here before. Always just dealt with scholars' law disputes between ship captains and the Scrivener's Guild. Hey, Scaly, have you ever been here before?
Nose buried in a book. The Aruxi takes a moment to pry his attention away.
Once or twice, I've always found the best way to stay off the watch list of the learned guard is to avoid interacting with them altogether. They're a testy lot.
So I've heard. Where are we going again?
To the wing on occult lore. And before you ask, I don't know why. Call this one a hunch.
Well, I know why. Because shit like those deaths and the myths around the Delores.
Yeah. Not exactly the ordinary kind.
Oh, yeah. Ordinary gruesome deaths and regular deadly shadows. I already miss those days.
There's a silence between the two for a short while as they meander along the halls.
Say, Scaly.
Yeah?
What's with the code names, anyway? Feels a bit like a pulp rag. I mean, Detective Smolder? Feels like they took one look at the Ifriti in me and drew my name out of a magical cliche hat.
They only give them out to some of us. Usually for the most dangerous work.
Yeah, but why?
You know we're usually supposed to question the witnesses and the suspects. Not each other.
Yeah, sorry. Just got a curious nature, I guess.
Management thinks the code names will help prevent forming attachment with a partner.
Does it work?
What do you think?
Detective Scaly lifts his head and stops to look at a fork in the hallway. The rod sputters, the scene becomes blurry and begins to shut down. But matching the steps and location breathes a bit of life into the magical mechanisms of the rod and the core. You can see Scaly look back and forth between directing signs that say knowledge of the paranormal to the left and esoterica and the abstract to the right.
Let's start with something we're more likely to get our heads around.
Can't argue with that.
And they turn to the left. And the recording flickers and stutters harshly. The detectives seem to vanish, and as you follow the path they took, you catch brief glimpses of them in a new impressive room that stands before you, but they're out of place. Thousands of books lining along the shelves and amid many nooks. A strange series of rotating shadows seem to shift along the floor before the rod finally shuts down. And as you follow this path and find yourselves in said room with these shadows, you look up and see these shadows shifting along the floor, but there was nothing casting them. And you are in another large library filled with all kinds of shelves lining the walls, different nooks and crannies, and this sort of semi-sickle-like sort of wall of shelves. And there is this rotating sort of series of shadows that do not have, again, do not have something that casts them down. I've just moved you on the map again. And you've entered another section of the library, again, that is noted as knowledge of the paranormal by the signs around you as you travel. There are various librarians and a few patrons of the library kind of milling about.
Arthur runs up, grabs Goku, wraps the reins around his mouth so he can't gnaw on any of the books, and brings them back.
While he's doing that, Scott would like to clarify one thing.
I'm sorry. When did you do that?
As soon as you finish talking, now. He makes a break for it. As soon as we discover this room, the knowledge of the paranormal, he does his best to go find Goku.
He says, wait here, I'm going back to the entrance.
I mean, yeah, he just climbed that big ass ladder.
Okay.
And while he's gone,
I just wanted to double check.
Yeah. Aelin and Scott are both pondering to themselves, is the agent's name Kitsune Smolder?
There's no Kitsune. What do you mean? There's an Afridi.
Yeah.
It's Kitsune Scaly. Kitsune Smolder.
What?
No one gets what you're saying, Scott.
I don't. I get the X-Files reference.
Yeah, it's the
X-Files.
I
don't get
reference,
the Kitsune part. That's the part I'm missing.
What's his first name, bitch?
Fox. Kitsune, I get it. Yeah.
Fox boy.
Oh, okay. Wow, I hope you didn't like injure yourself with that reach.
I'm very comfortable with where I am right now.
It honestly wasn't a
big
good connection,
stretch
but
for you.
I did not give it to you.
That deserves a hero point, I think.
Yeah, come on.
Plus, we already spent all his.
That's pretty good.
This is quite the X-Files thing. We've got a smoking man.
Telford is the smoking man.
There's another worldly goat.
I guess Kruga's Robert Patrick because no one wants him around that much.
We fucking did X-Files so hard accidentally. Like, we did it real fucking hard.
I'm just glad you all recognize the X-Files reference. I will give Scott a hero point for that, though. The Fox Kitsune. I did not intend that at all. But that's pretty good. You had to explain it, which sucks. But
yeah, I was hoping that's that. So bad, honestly, I thought James was going to get it in like 2 seconds.
No,
so.
Next time. I like X-Files, but I'm not like deep into it. I'm not going to change it if it comes on, but I don't seek it out. So I totally forgot his
name.
It's
great,
was Fox.
But some of it's shit. Yeah, that was me. I totally forgot it was Fox. This is the wing on knowledge of the paranormal, specifically.
Ooh. It's got a spooky three-quarter circle in the middle.
Real quick, Krugga, you helped me solve the riddle before. It's a knowledge of the paranormal. What was the rest of it?
I'm genuinely unsure what this setup is, Telford. You're going to have to help me out a bit.
Are you drawing a blank? Are you drawing a blank right now?
I am drawing a blank.
It's okay.
Where's the journals? There's the journals. Research. What was it? Topics 2 or checks 2? Oh, nope. That's a different thing. Recording core and notes. Raphael's note. Raphael's note 1. Knowledge of the Paranormal, The Dark Tapestry.
I believe we're looking for the book called The Dark Tapestry.
All right, The Dark Tapestry. That's
no,
what I
don't act like you knew it all along. Don't act like you knew it all along. You don't get to do
keep all that in.
Yeah, I don't give a shit. You can do whatever you want. But Telford's going to find the nearest person that looks like they're busy or not busy. Doesn't matter. And just rudely interrupt. Not in terms of like trying to be a dick, but just like not caring. Just
yeah.
I'm more important than you. And
excuse me. Can you help me find the Dark Tapestry?
So you just walk up to like a librarian. It was just like,
I don't care if they're a fucking person reading a book.
Yeah.
Like,
like someone's just doing busy work and they're just like, oh, hello.
Dark Tapestry.
Dark Tapestry. Well, I mean, you're right spot
enough
for
chit-chat.
That.
Yep, enough chit-chat. Help me find the book, please.
Right. What book are you looking for?
The Dark Tapestry.
Right. So, there's no, probably no such thing as the book called The Dark Tapestry. Yeah, I mean, you're in a library here. It's a funny logo, so it's just probably lots of books on said topic.
That's like being like, I want the book Christianity.
Yeah, it's called a Bible, yeah. Scott. It's right there.
Not the way
you're
not asking.
Saying Bible.
He could at least point me towards a Bible. Like it's whatever.
Yeah. It's, you need to be a little bit more specific.
Anything pertaining to outer gods and the great old ones.
Well, I mean, sure, yeah. There's lots in here. You might want to start. You go around the corner there, into the middle of the room.
Toughest section.
Work your way around. The Dark Tapestry sort of topics start inside there, if you will.
I see. Thank you so much for your help.
Right, that's fine.
Aelin begins to do a thorough search, looking for the section that has the Dark Tapestry.
Now, he said it's in the middle.
Looking around, are there any learned guards in here about to kick us out?
There are learned guards around, but nothing. No one looking to kick you out. Just keeping an eye on things.
But the guy didn't follow us that kicked us out of the last one. He just shooed us out.
Arthur will head up.
Arthur arrives back in the library with the bleating of a goat.
And just immediately walks up to the first librarian he can see, attempting, you know, like the most regal one, the one that looks like they work there and has probably got information.
Yeah.
If you would, excuse me, please, sir, and could you help me find some knowledge? Specifically about either a prolific killer called the Delaris, or about two unnamed Star Watch guards who had a penchant for the paranormal. If there's, you know, maybe a biography on them, or, I mean, I guess that's probably what I'm looking for, is a biography.
The guy turns to you and says, I believe the word you're looking for is penchant, not penchant, as you have said. To be perfectly honest, Mr. Shundi, you have to do your best to make sure you're a little more specific here. Because at the end of the day, asking about particular names and particular books is not exactly going to get you anywhere in such a large library or bibliothèque, as my people might say.
It's insultingly stereotypical French for yours.
Where did Freeman go? Just disappeared into that role.
All I see is a beret.
The moment you said penchant, I was like, French. He's going French.
Perfect. I loved it. I loved every minute of it.
Talford just is pulling any book that looks related off the shelf. Lit cigarette in his mouth, smoke curling up into his eyes, stinging it.
Yeah.
Just trying to get this fucking figured out.
Yeah.
the longer he stays here, the more that, like, I think staying with Arthur absolutely fucked him up in a way that he didn't expect. Yeah. Not used to dealing with people's emotions that way, and, like, having to stay there for that long with a clearly, I don't want to put
distressed.
Distressed Shuni that, like, is mm-hmm. dealing with the loss of, like, I don't want to play, like, James' character, but, like, just, like, I think that Arthur right now is probably fucked from losing his nephew and, like, Goku, mm-hmm. like, doing the Futurama fry dog meme, like.
Yeah.
And Arthur, yeah. like, Talford has no idea how to, like, handle any of these mm-hmm. kind of emotions and is just, like, sitting there chain smoking. I think when we get out of the pit, probably goes outside for a quick break, like, nope, don't talk to me, and goes and buys more cigarettes because, fuck, I cannot handle this.
Yeah.
And so, like, now is back in the library, like, just trying to, like, do the thing he knows, which is research and study.
Mm-hmm. Arthur?
No. You misunderstand me. Yeah, I am looking for a specific book about this prolific serial killer who killed in weird ways called the Delores. Or, I guess, and he reaches into his pocket, a copy of The Whispering Reeds. Do you have that in stock?
The librarian cocks an eyebrow. Says, I've heard of The Whispering Reeds, but should sort of book exist here in Zafari Logos? Well, that would be... sorry, tug his face. shit.
Fucking Cindy Freeman.
It's not such often you can alienate behind a whole country in 4 seconds.
such a book would be behind very secure doors, because it is a dangerous thing. So I have heard, but I do not know much about it. At the end of the day, serial killers probably not here in the knowledge of the paranormal, unless they are, of course, some sort of species from the dark tapestry or something beyond our universal material plane. I could use a little bit more narrowing down at the end of the day.
One of the detectives whose trail we are on was an Uruksi, and the other one was an Afriti. And at some point in time, they came to this section of this library to look up more information on the Delores. Could you just point me to the section? Is it alphabetical? He just starts looking around.
Most things are alphabetical, but also by section. I perhaps would suggest you go into the fiction section for your detective novels. But otherwise, if you need something otherworldly, you are in the right place.
Could you point me to the D's, and perhaps I can look up Delores myself?
Thinking he's just going to go to the D section and find Delores somehow.
Right, yeah. And I would recommend going to the center of the room and starting on your way out. You could get buried in here for hours.
You just see.
I could do this voice all day long.
You just see this look of fear strike across Arthur's face about the concept of being trapped in this library for another day.
He gives you a wink and says, "I've been here for years," like knowing full well it's put you on edge.
You have been most helpful, senior librarian. But could you perhaps answer me one question?
I highly doubt that miniature baguette saison.
Oh my god.
Could you explain to me why?
Oh my god. I've seen this before. This librarian has a small rat controller.
It's under his robes.
God damn it. It's just fucking.
Can we find the goddamn book yet?
Please! I'm trying to get out of here so hard.
Sorry.
I'm trying to push this plot so it doesn't become episode 126 of episode 100. God damn it, let me go.
There's just more episode 100 than there is stemming the tide.
It just keeps going forever. Episode 23 in the library and the paranormal as fucking Harper keeps politely asking this goddamn librarian, hey, where's this fucking book? Oh, I'm sorry, sir. Hold on, hold on. I don't know what book you're talking about.
I'm having a great time, so I'm good with this.
I am too, but it's just like... I think you are finding this bibliotheca mini papier.
Oh, no.
Okay. My last question before I leave you be is, what's casting shadows that are moving across the room?
Oh, now that is a wonderful question, Monsieur Chuny. It is believed to be an aurore from the Shadow Plane, what is known as the Netherworld, a planetary system of dead planets, something beyond, well beyond our existence, something within the darkest of the tapestries itself. Some even claim that it involves the planet known as Void Bracken.
Sacre bleu.
And you think I belong in the fiction section looking for two very real detectives?
You are a cleric, I can tell. You know that the things that exist beyond our reality, things that do not make sense, are very real.
Of course. Of course. Thank you, Mr. Librarian. You have been. And he walks away.
Arthur, I want you to roll me a religion check.
Oh, Jesus.
And Kruga, I want to know what you've been doing this whole time.
I just insult my god.
So fucking. You have been.
It's the closest thing to an insult that Arthur could muster.
It's so good.
It's a 31.
Okay. Kruga?
Kruga, hating what he's doing, but biting his tongue while he's doing it, will also head towards the center and start looking for those titles, but trying not to touch a book for fear of wanting to rip it in half.
As you sort of mosey around and take a look, Arthur, you actually kind of walk away with this idea in your head. The word that stood out to you was, you know, it was the dead planets. You asked about the shadows. It's an orrery of a planetary system that seems to be cast but from a different plane. But specifically mentioning Void Bracken resonates with you. And it is, from what you recall, a dead planet that is the home of an entity that was once defeated by Pharasma. And you know this because of your nephew's studies. The entity being Nimbaloth herself. In which when Pharasma reportedly, allegedly, had defeated Nimbaloth, destroyed her physical form. But many of the believers in Nimbaloth saw it as nothing more than an evolution rather than a defeat. Because this peripheral knowledge that you have in regards to Nimbaloth means it's the reason why Nimbaloth is able to simply travel along of her own volition and her own will the River of Souls and hunt. So for all the ridiculous encounter you just had, and for all the warmth you might have felt getting Goku back nearby as a comfort, your blood runs cold at the very thought that someone might casually mention Void Bracken as if it were a myth. Krugga, as you are waltzing around and just observing your surroundings, probably following your comrades, very noticeably avoiding the books, you can't help but notice one book that stands out as you find yourself into the midst of the mall. You round the corner. There's this sort of wall in the center of this room that turns in like a sickle, almost sickle formation. At the top of the wall, it's almost like a catwalk, but there's a sickle from the south that loops around the room, and in the center of the sickle kind of point is this glowing light, and that's where these rotating shadows come from. And the rotating shadows, you know, when you look up, there is no orrery, but you have gathered from said previous conversation, or maybe overhearing it with Arthur, that there is this orrery casting it, but the center of it feels like some sort of otherworldly sun that's punctuating and illuminating the whole room. And as you're wandering through, you notice one book standing out from the rest because it has a little piece of paper sticking out the top. As much as you want to avoid all of the books, perhaps it's a little bit difficult to avoid the calling of this extra little bookmark in a book.
Dragon stands for dummies. The picture version.
It's a pop-up book! As you approach said book, you see along the spine that it reads Raphael's personal journal for recreational use only.
Ledger recreational.
And that's what we're going to call it.
What the fuck, Freeman?
What the hell?
Stemming the Tide is an actual play podcast of the Adventure Path Abomination Vaults and is produced by the Uncharted North Network. Stemming the Tide uses trademarks and or copyrights owned by Paizo Inc., used under Paizo's community use policy. We are expressly prohibited from charging you to use or access this content. Stemming the Tide is not published, endorsed, or specifically approved by Paizo. For more information about Paizo Inc. and Paizo products, visit Paizo.com. Music is composed by Will Savino and artwork by Greyhood. Stemming the Tide is recorded remotely using Foundry Virtual Tabletop. If you wish to connect with us or support this project and projects to come, we can be found at unchartednorth.ca, patreon.com/unchartednorth, and on all major social media platforms. Links to all credits can be found in the episode description and our website. Thanks for tuning in.